This podcast is hosted by Chris Finkston and Spencer Oliver. They are both experienced paramedics. They've done everything from 911 ground ambulance to volunteer fire department work and are both currently flight paramedics. This podcast reviews scenarios based on real calls run by real out-of-hospital clinicians. Details are changed to protect the privacy of those involved and to present educational opportunities to the listener. This podcast is EMS 2020. Hey, everybody, welcome to... I'll be right back. Hang on. EMS 2020. Yeah, another episode of EMS 2020. My name is Chris. That is Spencer Oliver. Spence, how you doing, man?
I am good, man. I'm really good.
I am fucking great because the song contest is finally over. Actually, it was a lot of fun, but I will tell you this. I was both made happy by the number of responses we got and also sad by the number of responses we got, because that's a lot of music to listen to and consider. But you guys did not disappoint. We loved receiving everything, even well after we said, hey, no more. You guys kept sending them. But it's amazing. You guys sent some very surprising selections. If we could choose you all, we would. And actually, no, we wouldn't. There's a few that will not get chosen.
No, there's a few of you. There's a few of you out there.
Specifically.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
You're monsters.
You monsters. Jesus.
I'm calling you out.
So with that, before we get to the winners of the EMS 2020 Code 3 Song Challenge, that is where we asked you guys to pick the best song to drive lights and sirens to. Of course, we prioritize safety over music listening. But, you know, if let's just say it was for a movie. I don't know. So with that, before we get started, follow us on social media so you can participate in fun little contests like this. We are on Facebook at EMS20/20, on Instagram at EMS2020 Show. And please, if you want to advertise with us, or if you want to send us one of your calls for review, whether it's a call about a successful patient or a not so successful story, please send that to EMS2020podcast@gmail.com. With that, Spence, should we move on to the contest?
Let's move on to the contest, man.
All right. Absolutely. So here's what we kind of decided to do. I think we only said one winner. I think we've decided we're going to do four winners.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, the problem is that Chris and I couldn't agree.
No, we couldn't.
and then we couldn't even agree on like the next song, because we both were like, yeah, but what about this?
Yeah.
And so rather than explode this friendship and dissolve this podcast.
Right.
We decided.
We figured you guys would prefer this instead.
I mean, I can still dissolve this podcast. I can walk away. We can turn this car around at any time.
I can replace you. The podcast will be fine. Our friendship will dissolve into oblivion, but the podcast, it will remain. I think we each kind of picked like one that were like legitimately like, yeah. And then another one that was just kind of a surprise that we just couldn't get out of our heads and liked. Like just kind of the sleeper winner. Spence, who won for you? What are your two?
Okay, so my top song of all has to be the one that Shannon Sanchez submitted, which was Sabotage by the Beastie Boys.
Oh yeah,
because dude, it's just an ass kicker song. You can't like, even if you're like Code 3 to Toe Pain.
Yeah.
Then the guitar starts and you're like, man, here we go.
There we go. Boom.
And then the guy comes in like, ah! And you're like, yeah, no, I totally know how you feel. We're going on Toe Pain. Like, let's fucking do it.
Let's get this done. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, the Code 3 Toe Pain. That does actually happen, because it'll be like, yeah, I'm short of breath from the pain. They're like, oh, short of breath. Code 3 criteria. Here we go. And Boom. You're just like, Sabotage on the way in. Oh, God. So exactly. For me, my kind of Code 3 pick that I think I would actually listen to is going to be one submitted by Sabrina Bartel, and that is Rob Zombie's Dragula. I know it's not exactly like, I mean, it's definitely a staple song, it's common, but I had forgotten about it, and I listened to it after Sabrina submitted it, and I just fell in love with it again. And I'm like, no, you know what, this is a Code 3 song. My only concern is it's the tempo is up enough and it's aggressive enough that I'm just worried I'd like bust it on scene, just rip the patient's arms off and then walk out and be like, oh shit, I was here for an entirely different reason and I just wound up ripping someone's arms off. Shit. Or just rip off the painful toe. You know, like that's what I'm worried about when it comes to Dracula, Rob Zombie. But yeah. So Sabrina Bartel, Shannon Sanchez, you guys are both winners, but we have two more winners. So Spence, what was your sleeper hit? What was your surprise?
Okay. So this one totally caught me off guard. And there were a couple out there that I was like, okay, like I could slow roll to some opera. Like I could see this. But Ed Campbell's Little River Band, Hold On. Was
yes,
fucking chef's kiss, phenomenal, soft, low. I was just like, yes, this song has to be. It's my hops. I didn't expect it to work, and then it did, and I was so satisfied by it.
Wow! And who was that again? Who won that one?
Ed Campbell.
Ed Campbell. All right, congratulations, Ed Campbell. Mine had to be. And I don't know why, but I couldn't stop listening to it. The Venga Boys, We Like to Party. It has kind of, it's stupid. Like, I'm sorry for the Venga Boys if they're huge fans of us. They're not, I'm sure. But it's just, it's just like that bubblegum pop. I believe they're a German band and it's just so stupid, but. I could just see it had to me as the same vibe as Umbop, like going down Code 3. Like it's the same kind of like you think it wouldn't fit, but it does. Dude, it totally so does. You know, and the beat is there. It might be a CPR-able beat. I don't know. I'd have to listen again. But yeah, so for me, that was We Like to Party, and that was submitted by Nick Page. So
and go ahead. Dutch band, as it turns out. I just looked them up.
Oh, Dutch band. All right. Well, still, yeah. So Dutch pop. It's almost kind of like K-pop, but not at all. So with that, yeah.
Oh, we gotta call some people out.
Oh, we do gotta call some people out. Oh, Brad,
you monster.
We specifically said in the episode. Here's the thing: Ludacris's "Move, Bitch, Get Out the Way." That's kind of like when someone comes up and says, "Hey, name a patriotic song," and you're like, "National Anthem." It's like, well, no shit, that's patriotic. Come on, like you got to get more creative. I'm sorry, Brad. You have been a huge fan of the show. I don't mean to deter you from listening, but it.
I do.
Wow. But no, it was like, we're like, come on, don't put this one out. But we do realize that some people probably saw the Facebook post before they listened. And that is the bastion of hope that I'm giving to Brad. So yeah, if you put up that song, and by the way, several people put up that song. It wasn't just Brad.
Brad was the first.
Brad was the first. The first one that I saw anyway. I don't know if people put him up elsewhere, but yeah, Brad was the first. So Brad, mild chastising. But ultimately, Brad, thank you so much for being a fan of the show. We know that you've been there since the medical stuff days, and having you follow us to the show has been great. That being said, wrong
fuck
song.
You.
wrong song. We know Brad Dwayne personally Andrew, for anybody wondering that's why we're so freely ribbing the guy.
The Rebecca Black song.
Friday.
Dwayne, you monster. You know what was funny is that I remember seeing the Tosh.0 thing, and I remember going like, this is a horrible song. Somehow the version on Spotify is even worse.
It is.
I was like, this has I didn't think the song could get more terrible.
No, it's so, like somehow someone's like, hey, let's go ahead and amplify her voice only. We're going to isolate her voice and just kind of amplify it out and not smooth. Because sometimes music can really smooth out the rough edges of someone's voice, you know. But like in this case, it was like, shit. But oh my God.
Oh God, it only gets worse. Yeah.
Oh man. Dwayne. Dwayne, you get the, Dwayne, just to be clear, you're not getting a prize. But if we had a prize for like, you know. The monster reward, you would be it.
You would be it. Yep. So here's the cool thing that we're going to do, guys. And probably it's only cool for people who have Spotify. But what we're doing is I've taken all those suggestions and we've turned it into a Spotify playlist. And we will just share it on our social media so that you guys can also listen to all the other songs that everybody else has put out there. And I'll see if I can add to it. Because I know that there's some that have been added after the fact. And yeah, it'll be fun. Broaden your musical horizons.
So yeah, congratulations to Sabrina Bartel, Nick Page, Shannon Sanchez, and Ed Campbell. You guys are all going to receive some EMS 2020 stickers and a cash prize of $25. All right. So with that, the contest is done. We're already pretty well into this call. So let's get to the reason you guys come here, which hopefully isn't just prizes and songs and stuff like that. But Spence, what you got? Bring it on.
All right. So this call comes to us from a medic who at the time of this call had 3 years experience. I have dubbed them Frank Pierce. Their paramedic partner, Marcus, had 4 years at the time of this call.
What's the reference? I don't even know the Frank Pierce reference.
Oh, you'll have to wait. You'll wait and see.
Gotcha. Don't really worry. Quick, if there is an actual paramedic out there named Frank Pierce, this is not that person.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. This is a municipal third service EMS system in a large urban area, and I do mean large. This service has about 25 ambulances on during the day and 21 on in the evening. Though, like many places, staffing shortages can drastically lower the availability of ambulances, and this entity struggles to keep up with attrition, like many ambulance services do. Weird. Lots of people working for these companies are looking for better jobs with, you know, fire departments or not in healthcare.
just bailing out, which is kind of what's happening across the country.
Like, fuck this. Yep. Anyway, the ambulances are station-based and spread out around this city. These ambulances are usually parked at fire stations or police stations. So while they have quote-unquote stations, they don't exactly have quarters in these stations. They don't have beds because their shifts are 12 hours long. That's both night and day shifts. And no sleeping is allowed. All shift changes occur promptly at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. throughout the entire city.
That is crazy.
That is crazy to me, to not have that staged out, but okay. So the crew reports that they are held over pretty often and believe that they average about 6 calls per shift, though it can be much higher. And you would suspect that if medics are peeling off to join up with fire departments, that there'd be a pretty medically minded fire service in the area. But the crew states that it actually kind of depends. It differs from company to company and station to station. And the crews are mostly EMTs with just a few medics on for each fire shift. But thankfully, Frank and Marcus, the crew of this evening's call, say that the staff at their station are actually incredibly helpful and participatory on calls.
Good.
So let's move on to the call.
Let's get it.
All right. So it's 0200 hours, or is it 0300 hours? Frank Pierce and his partner Marcus are pulled from their safety rest, which, on record, is totally not sleeping, to respond to an unresponsive female in a car. This call takes place right around the corner from their station, and the crew is aware that the closest hospital to them is a level 1 trauma center, stroke center, and PCI-capable center.
Oh.
So it does all the things.
That's a solid hospital right there. By the way, I'm also surprised you allowed such an inaccuracy in time to grace one of the calls that you've brought.
Every so often I just got to switch. I wrote this with my left hand.
Yeah. Oh,
gosh. Actually, you know what? I'm cutting that out.
Yeah. No, I don't know. You don't cut shit, buddy. I cut. I'm the one who cuts.
I'm the one who cuts. I'm the one who knocks.
Exactly.
I love it. Love it. Yeah, I just had to switch it up. All right.
Oh, you think that's getting in there? You think I'm replacing it with that?
I hope this whole thing stays in there. All right. It's about 5 minutes away from the call location. The crew members don't say much on the way. Both of them are working towards making themselves fully alert, and odds are, given the time of day, that this is probably going to be an overly intoxicated individual.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean... I've ridden in an Uber and Lyft. I know the kind of people that, you know, they pick up, because I'm curious. I'm always curious when I ask these guys, like, hey, so how's your evening? What, you know, what's your usual Friday night evening? And they're like, oh, it's great until about, you know, 1:45, 2 o'clock.
Right.
Then my evening sucks.
Right.
So the crew arrives to the scene. It's on a neighborhood street with multiple rundown homes, a few abandoned homes, and there's also this beat-up sedan on the side of the road with a male flagging down the ambulance by waving his arms and running into the street. Frank and Marcus park their ambulance and exit. The male tearfully tells the providers that, my wife won't wake up. The crew make their way over to the car, which they note is run down and is full of garbage.
Oh, extra they padding. That's a safety feature.
It's important. Exactly. Jesus. They spot the female in the front passenger seat. Her head is tilted back and she is snoring. One of the crew members goes to assess the patient while the other grabs information from the husband. So, Chris, it's another choose your own adventure episode. What do you want to hear first? Do you want HPI or assessment?
You know what? Let's just start with the history of present illness.
Oh, all right.
Let's go that direction.
Going for the history first. Okay. Yeah. So, okay, here it is. Per the husband, his wife, a 45-year-old female, was out with friends this evening. He came to the friend's house to pick her up. And this sounds like it was an arranged plan. But honestly, the crew wasn't all that sure.
Okay.
The husband picked her up from the party not all that long ago. She seemed like she'd been drinking, but he isn't sure of how much she had to drink with her friends or if there were other substances involved. His wife does have a history of drug abuse, specifically cocaine, from which she's believed to be recently clean. As they were driving home from this event, he believed that she had fallen asleep in the passenger seat, but now she just won't wake up. She's been asleep for about 10 minutes, and the husband does voice some concern that she might have used this evening. The crew does ask him about heroin use, and the husband denies that she's ever used heroin, but really can't say for certain that she wouldn't have tried it. And by the way, just for a little background here, there's been a recent influx of lots of street drugs cut with fentanyl, including cocaine.
Oh,
and so there have been quite a few people who think they're doing one drug type who then fall out because, you know, they're unexpectedly also using fentanyl and they're, you know, opioid naive. So it's kind of a big deal in that area. Anyway, so we're not really sure. It doesn't sound like there was any drug use, but he's saying like, yeah, maybe there could have been some. We just didn't know. The patient has no other medical history beyond her illicit drug use, takes no medications, and has no known drug allergies. And importantly, the patient didn't verbalize any complaints to her husband prior to becoming unresponsive. So, Chris, are there any other questions you'd want to know in this history?
Not really. I'm super curious about the assessment at this point, because to me, just make sure I got this straight. From the husband's perspective, he picked her up at a party after she was out with friends. They drove for a little bit, and then suddenly he just can't get her to wake up.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like she sort of fell asleep. He thought she'd been drinking. She got into the car.
And then he gets somewhere and goes to say, hey, sweetie, and then there's no response to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm going to be super... So I think, like, listening to this HPI, I think a lot of people are probably going to be driven towards the overdose route. And that's definitely one to consider. Like, this HPI, like, you cannot overlook the possibility of overdose here, especially with kind of the area history, which I love that is included. That's actually, like, that's really important, not just in terms of drug use, but, like, in terms of, like, you know, illnesses going around, like when norovirus outbreak or coronavirus or all those things, like, you need to pay attention to what's going on in your community. And so I love that history is there as part of the HPI. But another thing is I got to see this assessment, because I'm also curious, and this just because I can think back to calls where I've been burned on this. When you have someone who has a lot of garbage in their car, there's a high probability, or I say a higher probability, that they may be living in that car or they spend more time in that vehicle than you might expect. And that's why the trash is there, because most people have trash cans. They don't. They have their car. And anytime you have an environment like that, that you spend a lot of time in, infection and sepsis is something that can kind of creep up on you. Like if you have a wound, it gets difficult to keep that clean when you live in a cramped, dirty space. So I'm curious to see this assessment. I really want to see the head to toe. So as far as the HPI goes, I don't have any burning questions, but let's get onto that assessment. I want to know what happens now.
Okay. Yeah. So onto the assessment. All right. The patient is seated upright and belted into a front passenger seat. Her head is tilted back and she's exhibiting snoring respirations. A firm sternal rub has no effect. The patient's radial pulse is strong, 80 beats per minute. Her respirations are reported to be 10 per minute and seem to be full tidal volume, although she is snoring. The patient's pupils are checked and noted to be 2 millimeters, but are equal and reactive. The fire department team is also there, and they are directed by Frank and Marcus to get the stretcher and bring it over to the car. Frank and Marcus lift the patient out of the car with one under the shoulders and one under the feet, and together they kind of pull, lift her out of the car. Once in the air, the patient flails her extremities, per the crew, but otherwise gives no response. And this movement stops once she's on the stretcher. And from the stretcher, they just kind of move her into the back of the ambulance. Frank tells the husband that they will take her to the local hospital, which is about 5 minutes away again. And the husband agrees and says that they will go there in their own car. All right. So, Chris, given the story so far, given the brief assessment that we have here, what are you thinking? What are your concerns? And what would you like to do next?
I mean, there is that knee-jerk reaction is to consider this an overdose, right? I mean, I mentioned that earlier. I mean, you've got the low respiratory rate, seems likely. You've got the not only the personal history of the patient, but you've got a community history of spiking her drug of choice with opioids, because this sounds like an opioid overdose. Yeah. But, I mean, honestly, if I've learned anything from doing this podcast, it's that you got to cast a wide net. And so to start casting that net, I would really like a set of vital signs on her. Let's see where those are at.
What vitals specifically? Just out of curiosity.
So let's make sure that we get oxygen saturations. And I know her, did they give a respiratory rate? They just say depressed.
They did. Yep. Respiratory rate was 10.
Okay. So let's get some oxygen saturations. Let's see what that respiratory rate of 10 is actually doing for her. Sounds like she's got a good radial pulse. I think you said it was in the 80s. But let's make sure we got a blood pressure associated with that. Let's get a CBG, of course.
Ah, damn it. All right. Fine.
So yeah, let's just start there. Let's start with that. Okay. Let's get those things.
Well, all right, so here's what happens. The crew loads her into the ambulance, and several things happen. They place the patient on the monitor and get a full set in vitals, including a 3-lead. The patient's O2 saturation comes back at a whopping 82%, which, by the way, that's a B- in breathing. Blood pressure is 178 over 90. The heart rate is 84 beats per minute, normal sinus rhythm on the monitor, and a CBG was also checked and noted to be 130 milligrams per deciliter, okay, or 7.2 millimoles.
And B minus in breathing.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's actually kind of an F, to be dead honest. Like that, you shouldn't have it. That's not a B minus is something like, all right, okay, I can live with this. That's not what this is. That's not what this is.
Hey, man, I went to public school. Like 82% was basically an A for me. God. So,
brief story. I briefly, in a brief period of time in my life, I volunteered and helped out with a cadet program at my local high school, and they had cadet EMTs. And like, you would bring them up there, and this is the difference between like adult learning and like the high school learning, sometimes, not all people, of course, but you'd be like, hey man, you barely passed by 1 point. Like you really need to shape up. They'd be like, yes, I passed. And you're like, no, like you barely passed. Like you were on the cusp of that. Like you passed because I gave you partial credit on an answer that quite frankly, I know you didn't know. Like that's why you passed. And then adult learning, they're like, oh shit, I'm on the cusp. But no, yeah, that's a difference right there. But anyway, yep. So the B-.
How many days can I skip and still get a letter grade?
All right.
With the discovery of the low SpO2, the patient is put on a non-rebreather mask at 15 liters per minute, and Marcus pulls out their IM Narcan. And by the way, I'm sure he placed a hand on the patient's chest and said, "Please, Lord, bring back I be banging, Lord. You have the power, Jesus."
Now I get the reference. This is a reference to Bringing Out the Dead, starring Nicolas Cage.
Oh, shit. You did. Did get it.
Yep.
Nice.
That is a movie based on, I want to say, like early 90s paramedicine, which it seems extreme for what we do. But I don't know. I want to say it takes place in New York or Los Angeles, some overcrowded system.
I think it's New York.
I'm pretty sure it's New York. So for all I know, super accurate.
It was a funny scene. If you haven't seen Bringing Out the Dead, Bringing Out the Dead,
it's a fun watch.
Watch it, eat popcorn, and go like, that's not what we do.
Yeah, and don't model yourself after the people. The only thing that we definitely do is we definitely wake up at post and like start driving with our partner, being like, "No, turn around." that does happen. What we don't do is chase down patients and try to murder them. But spoiler alert. So, so just a couple comments here. So I've got my vital signs now. So the 82%, not happy with that. I'm happy they slapped an NRB on. That's great. I'm really curious to see what the Narcan does. The only thing here that's kind of hitting me weird is that hypertension. If anything, most of my narcotic overdoses have gone the other direction. Now, fentanyl is kind of the community history here, right? Like fentanyl being cut into stuff. And fentanyl does not necessarily have vasodilative properties. Plus, if it's cut into cocaine, like that could certainly have an impact on the blood pressure the other way. But it does kind of strike me as odd because, you know, if we're talking about a possible narcotic overdose, the respiratory depression effect is coming through. If it is something like morphine that does cause vasodilation, I would think that effect would come through too. So that kind of strikes me as a little bit off, but I am curious to see what the Narcan does.
I agree with your assessment here in that something doesn't quite feel right. Yeah. I mean, granted, like, you know, like in your typical heroin overdoses, you tend to have, you know, like slower heart rates, lower blood pressures, you know, really low respiration rates and shallow breathing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like if they're cutting cocaine or meth, you know, that's our drug of choice around here is meth. Cutting meth with fentanyl, then you still have that sort of like that respiratory depression that, you know, where they're nodding off and they're, you know, they're not really awake, but you still have, you know, like a pretty solid blood pressure. So that could be it here. They're usually more tacky in my experience too. Their heart rate stays up pretty elevated, even though they're just kind of sleeping against the gurney. But yeah, so
but she doesn't have that. Yeah. So to me, like, I mean, I'm curious to see what the Narcan does, but I'd definitely be kind of ready to start turning over other stones when that doesn't work. I haven't really seen also a solid head to toe. And while the high blood pressure doesn't really make me think sepsis because it normally goes the other way and you get like tachycardic patients, I would be curious about like a trauma assessment. Like, do we have a head injury? Because those are cases where you will see hypertension. A stroke's going to be hard to assess for if she's not really following commands, but that needs to be on the list to see if you can't get some kind of assessment there as well. But anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Marcus has given the intramuscular Narcan, doing the, you know, ceremony of hands, laying on of hands. I don't know what that's called. Doing something with the hands. So Frank sneaks a 20 gauge IV into the patient's right antecubital space. And then a 12 lead is done, which shows normal sinus rhythm. The patient's mentation does not change, but the SpO2 is now up to 92%. Respirations are also essentially unchanged. The crew discusses giving another dose of Narcan IV, and here, by the way, is the rationale. In this area, the crews have noticed that the opiate overdoses can actually be really significant. There are cases where people have had to take 6 to 8 milligrams Narcan IV just to get a respiratory rate above, like, 2. So, knowing this, and seeing as how their patient still seems out and could use some more respiratory support, they continue down this pathway. So the patient is given another 2 milligrams IV Narcan. And within a minute of that, the patient's O2 saturation is now 99%, and she opens her eyes when her name is called.
Okay.
She also squirms on the stretcher, but otherwise there is no verbal response besides sort of a groan. Nor does the patient seem to follow any commands. So GCS, for the record, is eyes are 2, verbal is 2, and 3 for motor. So she just sort of withdraws from pain.
Gotcha. So she opens her eyes to pain. She'll kind of make sounds to pain and then withdraws from pain. Okay. So not great still.
Yeah. So the patient is taken off the non-rebreather mask. And Frank and Marcus clear the fire department because, well, the mystery as to why the patient is out seems to be solved.
Mm-hmm.
Frank hops up front to drive, and Marcus stays in the back with the patient. So the crew does transport Code 3 to the local emergency department, and the rationale behind that is there's actually this operational guide that dictates that they will do this in this case, which, as an aside, kind of makes sense in a way, but it's also strange in a way. So essentially they're like, hey, we have this person who is essentially unresponsive. We've given, you know, 2 doses of Narcan too, and they remain pretty somnolent. So they have an operational guide that says, like, you shall transport this patient code 3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the weird part for me is, like, if I wanted to in the ground ambulance, you know, the ground service that I work for, if I was like, yeah, we're going to slow roll this trauma or, you know, this train wreck of a patient, like, I can slow roll a STEMI if I wanted. I'm like, yeah, code 1. And there's no
one. You can
one,
also just quit too. I mean, there's.
I could. And no one, like, there's no one going, like, hey, you shouldn't.
Yeah. That's like, true. The code 1 code 3 determinant hasn't. It's entirely your judgment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And that is interesting. And to me, like, it rubs me the wrong way a little bit because to me, I think you and I've talked about this. The advantages of code 3 are few. Truly, in most patients, running lights and sirens when you weigh it against the safety risk, the advantage is actually pretty slim. It gets you around stoplights and heavy traffic pretty well. But other than that, it doesn't really do much for you. More often than not, code 3 is basically a way to tell a receiving hospital, hey, we're serious. Like that's mostly what you're doing with code 3.
Yeah.
And so in this case, it seems like there's an overvalue. There's an extreme value assigned to transporting code 3 that I don't share. And so when I hear that, like, oh, you have to go code 3 with this kind of patient, it's like, well, why? Like, if I'm across the street from the ER, am I still going to light it up and dodge traffic, like go cut through an intersection to get there? Like the one intersection between me and them. Anyway, that's just my comment. So
that's fair. Yeah. So anyway, these guys are on it. It's a 5-minute transport, and on arrival to the ED, Frank learns that his partner administered another 2 milligrams Narcan to the patient as they felt that her mentation decreased, and so did her room air saturation. So she was placed back on a non-rebreather mask. The patient's heart rate and BP are reported to be unchanged, and her respiration rate was about 12 to 14 a minute. So that's what we have for vitals. So the crew arrive to the ED room, they move the patient over to the bed, and they give report to an ED resident and an emergency department paramedic. The resident makes a joke about partying a little too hard, and they start their assessment. The crew exits a room and is BSing with staff around this desk. They do go back in service, but they decide, you know, like, it's 2 or 3 in the morning, whatever time it is, we're just going to hang out here and see what happens. So, and now I get to read you the email from Frank Pierce.
Perfect.
After about 10 minutes of sitting there, we see the residents and medic wheeling the patient from the room towards radiology and overhear that they are activating a stroke. My partner and I are both very confused and we're not expecting that. And at first we're like, there's no way it's a stroke. How could they even come to that conclusion so quick? So we keep sitting there to see what happens, and sure enough, they bring her back to the room and confirm that it's an ischemic stroke and begin TPA administration. So being curious what led them down to this being a CVA, my partner and I go to the attending doctor and ask them what led them down that road. And she nonchalantly is like, oh, yeah, she's not moving her right side.
Oh.
And both of us are just like, what do you mean? She was flailing all over when we moved her or did a sternal rub. So the doctor then stated like, yeah, she's flailing her extremities, but only her left arm and leg. And sure enough, we go to take another look in the room and the left leg is twitching and moving and her right arm and leg are perfectly still.
Oh my.
And looking back at the call, both Frank and Marcus went like, no shit, there it was. Yeah, she did not move her right side.
Okay.
The patient moved her extremities, but didn't move one side.
Okay. That, woof. So let's just summarize this call really quick. So did they determine that the patient did indeed have a stroke?
Yes, this was confirmed by CT. She did have a thromboembolic stroke.
Yep. Okay. So quick kind of end of call. So basically you have two paramedics respond to an unresponsive female in a car. She has a drug use history. It sounds like she was in a situation where drug use could have occurred. There is a local community history of fentanyl being cut into her drug of choice. And you have someone that kind of looks like a narcotic overdose. I'm going to give them that. You know, you have the low respirations and all that stuff going on. When they move her, she flails, apparently with just one side, but they didn't notice that at first. And then they proceed to administer Narcan and oxygen, and that seems to help a little bit. I mean, it helps her saturations a lot. Her oxygen saturations came up great. But I'm just going to point out her mentation didn't. And that strikes me as pretty strange. The times that I've given Narcan, like you usually get a marked increase in mentation. She had her mentation increased somewhat, but not significant at all. Like I feel like Narcan should be working better than that, but kind of moving past that point, they deliver her to the ER thinking, yep, partied too hard. The resident apparently agrees that she just partied too hard, only to then later be like, oh, she's only moving one side. She goes for a CT and it's a stroke.
Yeah.
So shit.
This is the reason I like this call is the big crucial takeaway. And again, this is one that we've featured before, but it bears repeating. There are going to be patients who just cannot participate in a stroke assessment or who are just obtunded. And, you know, we have to find ways to be able to complete that assessment still, you know, to think about that assessment and still use it, because it's really easy to overlook, you know, it's like, oh, the patient can't participate in a stroke assessment, not doing a stroke assessment. When really what we should be thinking is like, oh, this patient can't participate in a stroke assessment. Is there a way that I can work around that? You know? Remember the episode Soft Shell Redemption?
Barely.
All right. So in Soft Shell Redemption, remember the first call that Soft Shell went on with Walnut? they went on a subarachnoid hemorrhage, and they thought it was, but the patient didn't really kind of like fail a stroke screen, even though their heart rate was incredibly high and their blood pressure was high, and then their heart rate was low and they had this horrible headache, and then, you know, they seized and died. I don't know if they died, but they got to the hospital and the patient seized. In the following week, they went on a patient who had a seizure and yelled before the seizure, who may or may not have had a like seizure history because there was a language barrier in the house. Mm-hmm. And the patient was moved down to the ambulance, and they were going to just go code one with this postictal patient. But Softshell saw that the patient was moving, but just one side, and coupled that with the history of yelling before the seizure, not really being sure if there was a seizure history. And just fun fact, you actually can have unilateral weakness after a seizure called, like, that's Todd's paresis. In that case, given that there wasn't really a great seizure history, the patient didn't seem to be improving with the postictal period, the medic made the right call in saying, like, I think this is a stroke, and went to the hospital, and sure shit it was. It ended up being a hemorrhagic stroke in that case, which makes sense. But that was one of the pieces that we pulled from that call, was that the medic astutely recognized, like, hey, I can't do this. Something isn't adding up here, and made that and saw that patient not moving, which, you know, in my mind, that's, you know, those are pro points. I don't fault the crew for failing to see that here.
No, it's definitely kind of something that you develop. And I think this is kind of what separates, you know, what you learn in school from what you learn in the field, which is kind of what our podcast is about. It's actually exactly why we started the podcast, was like, hey, like, yeah, Here's all this shit that we learned after school. And we want to share that. And that's kind of what this is. And I think kind of where this comes down to, and I think where the easy fault is, and why, because it ended up being a CVA. And I'll even admit, like, if you go back and listen, I kind of casually mentioned it, and even I was kind of like, yeah, how do you get participation out of someone as a narcotics overdose? But, you know, you should try somehow. And then I left it at that. I was not expecting this to actually turn into a stroke. But just to be fair, I was expecting either a missed sepsis on a head to toe or missed trauma or something to that effect. But
sure.
I think the problem is a lot of CVA guidelines and stroke scale guidelines, they really seem to want patient participation, right? Like, you're telling them to follow commands and stuff. They want, you got to get the patient to speak, you need to grab my hands and those kind of things. And so it's easier to accidentally kind of overlook strokes when you can't really use that scale. But keep in mind that severe strokes can alter the level of consciousness, and you might be able to catch these things in other ways. And this is where I think it's really crucially important to have that wide net and a methodical way of assessing altered LOC. AEIOU tips is a very common mnemonic. Go Google that. I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but it's a great altered LOC mnemonic to help you remember everything to check for. There's kind of what I do, which is the whole, like, hey, does it have supply? Like, does it have fuel supply, sugar, oxygen, blood? Next up, is it broken? Trauma, you know, CVA or sepsis. And then after that is, you know, like, are they intoxicated? And that can be, which is what this one might fall under. That includes both accidental, intentional overdose, or they just have prescribed medications that aren't working well. And then after that, you know, go behavioral and have that approach and go through it no matter what. Even once you've found the route, the one thing that, you know, NRDMT kind of falsely trains you to chase, that one, the white rabbit there. Even once you've had that, what you need to do is you still need to go check off the other things. And I think when you are more like, hey, I'm looking for a stroke, and less I'm looking to complete a stroke scale, I think you find these things a little bit better. And that's kind of where I think this would come in. It's like, hey, I need to see if there's a stroke going on. I can't complete a stroke scale, but I mean, shit, are they moving all their extremities? Because that's really the only thing you can test on this lady, is how well she moves her extremities when she jostles around. And I am glad. And I think what makes me super happy, though, is that this crew seems to really, like, reflect on it. I can see so many crews being like, well, how was I to know? Couldn't possibly do a stroke scale. It's not my fault. You know, and then, like, kind of bouncing on that. And that is where four-year medics, that is a quintessential four-year medic. So round of applause to these guys for being like, shit, and then reflecting on something they missed. Because these are the kind of paramedics that go forward and improve at the four-year mark, not the others.
No, I agree. The fact that they stuck around, you know, to find out what happens. I mean, that's the thing, is like, occasionally I'm like, yeah, this is nothing. And then I'll stick around to find out that it's not nothing. Yeah. One of my favorites. Good. Yeah. Young guy brought in, nausea, vomiting. Very just not a fun call for me. Got to the hospital, and I've wanted to follow up with the nurse because I figured it was going to be an AMA. And then it turns out the patient ended up in the ICU.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I was glad, you know, like, that's
nice.
I was like, yeah, it's not just the sick ones that I follow up on to find out what happened. It's the patients that I'm like, this isn't anything serious. And then you find out you're wrong. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, speaking of weird things, though, let's talk about it, because we mentioned the vitals for the, we talked about the vitals and how they didn't really fit for opioid. overdose. So do you think opioid overdose was a fair treatment plan that they went on and kind of stuck with?
I absolutely do. No, I think an opioid, okay, to stick with it, no. Like, I mean, I'll kind of echo what I said earlier. I don't think you can find one thing and stop, but it's very difficult to fault a crew for wanting to do it. Because one of the things I can tell you, yeah, the vital signs didn't exactly say opioid overdose, especially when you start talking about like the blood pressure, for example. But the saturation sure did, and the respiratory rate sure did. Because I'll tell you this, you know what doesn't say stroke? Low sats.
Yeah.
Low sats and low respiratory rate are not necessarily associated with stroke. The hard thing about strokes, though, is anytime you start damaging the brain, you can really affect anything. I mean, really, if it's a big enough stroke, things can go downhill in a hurry.
And this does sound like it was going to be a big stroke. Like, it took out her level of, it altered her level of consciousness significantly.
Very true.
So, to me, that's like a large vessel occlusion stroke.
Yeah, and lots of things can happen in that case. But it's really hard to fault them when they have that kind of history and that kind of, you know, like I mentioned a few times, the community history. And you go on someone with low oxygen saturations and a low respiratory drive. And then to boot, you give them Narcan and oxygen and their mentation does improve slightly, not a ton.
Yeah.
But it does kind of improve and their saturations come up. I can really see, like, it's fair to want to have given Narcan. I think that is fair.
Totally.
I think where this train went off the rails was stopping at Narcan, especially to me, like, on one hand, her saturations improved, but when her mentation only improved barely, which honestly, I'm not sure if that's a mentation improvement or if that's agitation. But when it only improves that minute amount, bells really probably should have gone off, at that point that, okay, why is she not coming around? I totally get that they've had cases where they've had to just dump tons of Narcan in patients to get anything. But in this case, you know, typically, and this is just I don't have a study, but behind this. So this is just my experience. So feel free to lambast me on Facebook if you want to. But in my experience, what pretty much the Narcan, it either affects all the areas like respiratory rate and mental status, or you need to give more. So I usually get, nope, nothing, nope, nothing, nope, nothing. Oh, stats and mental status come up together. And so to me, it would be bizarre if only one thing started coming up, and that's the stats. And the problem is too, is who's to say it was the Narcan? Who's to say it was the non-rebreather?
Yeah.
You know, it's super difficult. It's super difficult to tell, like, what brought her sats up, you know, in the first place. Fair to give Narcan? 100%. Fair to stop? Nah. You probably should have started going, but it's an easy pit to fall in. And I will say, I see a younger version of myself doing exactly this, and it's not that much of a younger version of myself. So,
dude, for sure.
You know.
Yeah. No, I could easily see myself sort of falling into the same thing, you know, like going like, yeah, man, things don't really add up, but is it me or did this Narcan just sort of work a little bit? Cause like eyes are opening now.
Yeah.
And just sort of failing to appreciate, like globally, like the respiration rate hasn't really changed that much. We also put oxygen on her. Oxygen might have been something where her brain just is like, oh, you know, I just needed a couple more oxygen cells to function a little better.
Yeah.
And now I have that so I can open my eyes. Yeah. You know, so I totally could see myself, you know, just kind of going into like, all right, well, let's do more, I guess. And hopefully those things continue to improve. It's also a very short time for it to not improve. I think like the general like half-life that I saw, or like for peak effect, it's like 15 minutes. For Narcan. So you should have, like, that should have sort of stayed and maintained to the degree that it did. And so the fact that they lost it, you know, again, like she kind of went back under in just a short period of time, that also doesn't really add up to me, you know. But I'm also not a pharmacist, so, you know, that could be, yeah, that could just be a thing that normally happens, and I just don't see it in the patients that we have. So
true. Very true.
You're absolutely right. Like, this was a fair treatment plan to take. I agree that, you know, had they been able to kind of work around that stroke assessment and really look like to make sure that, you know, like there was some, to recognize that there was something else going on, that would have been preferred, because then they would have been able to give the, you know, the stroke center a head up, like, hey, we're worried about this being a stroke. But I don't fault them for missing that. And I totally get why they would just kind of stay on the Narcan train, hoping that it worked out. So
yeah, and there's also this. There's zero reason why this can't be both things.
Yeah, true. Exactly. My experience, again, with like the speedball people, mm-hmm. you know, who are mixing speed and heroin, or, you know, speed and fentanyl, is that their heart rate stays really high. Their mentation, they have like the heroin nod, but like the rest of their vitals are elevated.
Yeah.
It's super weird. And mm-hmm. then if you give them Narcan, then all you have is like the meth or the
cocaine. You have fight. Working. You have a fight on your hands is what you have.
You have a fight. Exactly.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Because so Narcan isn't fun, FYI. I've never been anybody like, oh, yeah, give me more of that Narcan. That's never happened in my career. Narcan's not fun. It makes you nauseous. People wake up with headaches. And now you're going to be like, hey, you're also raging on methamphetamine that was tempered down by the stuff I just yanked out of your system. Come on up. It's a party. Let's go.
It's a Venga Boys song.
So yeah, exactly. We like to party. They just come up. So yeah, it's interesting. Yep. Yeah. So hey, with that, just to kind of summarize, I think the main learning point from this one is, and again, we've talked about it before, that is keep casting that wide net and just keep turning over stones. It's one of those things also that, you know why you do stroke assessments, know what the stroke assessment is trying to get at. And just because you can't use one tool to figure out if someone's having a stroke doesn't mean you really get to stop, you know, and I'm not saying that's exactly what these guys did, but I'm just saying that like, that is something that we need to keep in mind, is that there are other ways to get the information, that we need.
Part of being a paramedic, I joke with the nurses that I work with all the time, is like just being able to kind of make shit up on the fly.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, like having a workaround for, it's like, oh, we can't get this thing, or we can't do this, you know, assessment or skill. It's like, now we can figure it out, you know.
Right.
We can put an IV in that foot.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines ever was, we had just started the active cooling protocols for post codes, you know, getting the heart rate and, you know, getting a heart rhythm and respiratory rate back. And for a while we were cooling people after that, because there were some positive outcomes. And one of the, when they were first kind of pitching this to the group of paramedics, you know, they're training everybody on it. You know, they're like, well, how are we supposed to get these patients truly that cool with what we have in the ambulance? And one doc comes up and goes, you guys are paramedics. Like, you guys, like, that's your thing. Like, you guys are good at that. You've got ice packs, but, you know, if you find like a bag of ice in someone's house, like, grab that. Like you guys are like, this is your wheelhouse. And that's like making things happen where they shouldn't happen. And everyone's kind of like, yeah. And then someone goes like, and then someone brings up like, what about like a rectally inserted otter pop? And then Jesus. Yeah, and then the physician's like, yeah, that I, if you guys roll in with a rectally inserted otter pop in a patient, that's it. Like I'm not, like, I can't let you slide on that one. That's going to be a problem. So
that, ladies and gentlemen, is the line. That, unless it's orange flavored.
Unless it's orange.
It's orange flavored. Yeah. Yeah. Orange gets a pass.
Orange is, because, yeah, I mean, because they don't taste good. So you might as well, because orange is always the one that's left, right? You always have like you have a box of Otter Pops, and then by the time you're done, ready to get rid of it, it's just a box full of orange. That's all it is. So really, you might as well shove it up someone's ass. That's a better use for it than eating it.
And you heard it here first on EMS 2020. I'd treat your patients.
The orange pop. We do in EMS 2020, we do not recommend sodomy in any line of treatment. So with that, I think that's the awkwardest fuck ending right there. I think we did it. I think we're successful in that. So with that, please, as always, follow us on social media. We are on Facebook at EMS20/20. We're on Instagram at EMS2020 show. Send us your tales of woe, or tales of good to, EMS2020podcast@gmail.com. If you wish to advertise with us, that is also where you should go. Once again, congratulations to Sabrina Bartel, Nick Page, Shannon Sanchez, and Ed Campbell. You guys won the, EMS2020 Code 3 song contest. And we'll be getting hold of you guys shortly. With that, we're out.
Boom.